You're listening to Cannabis Business Confidential by Hybrid Marketing Co. Our podcast explores every corner of the cannabis industry with expert guests for a behind-the-scenes look at this rapidly evolving space. From business insights to cultural and community trends, we'll ensure you stay informed and ahead of the curve.
Those of us who are steeped in the cannabis industry often hear, well, never a dull moment, but it often refers to the regulatory challenges, business hiccups, price compression, any number of pitfalls and bumps in the road. But rarely when we say that, are we talking about an entity that has been swinging hard for the fences and bringing home some phenomenal wins. That's why I invited Walter Apodaca to join me on the podcast today. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Vessel. Best known for the truly innovative technology of the Vessel brand itself and his wildly successful beverage brands on the regulated side of the industry, Potshot and Calvara. If you don't know Potshot yet, it's a high dose beverage dubbed the official shot of summer. It's a celebrity brand of contemporary and alternative R&B artist Miguel that's been picked up by Trulieve to reside within its portfolio. There's so many exciting things going on kind of on multiple sides of the business. The other is Calvara, which Trulieve first fell in love with. We're going to hear more on that in a second. Walter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, there's so many pieces of the business as we were just speaking earlier, where you've knocked it out of the park. So it's not a fluke. It's not, hey, we're going to see if this works. You've historically come from a space that has allowed you to be as successful as you are because you're an intelligent, hard-pressing businessman. And I just want to jump in and get a little bit of background, but, tell me more about yourself and Vessel to start.
Maybe to start, just a little humility here. We're looking to knock it out of the park. I think we've had some singles and doubles and we're pretty excited about it. But I'll admit I don't think I've been more excited about the business than I am right now. I have a long beverage background, traditional CPG, spent a number of years, got my start there where you're at in Denver with a small 7-Up bottler. But was really fortunate, had, early in my career, we brought, Red Bull on as a client. And it's really funny to even hear myself say that today, because at the time we were one of their first wholesalers in the country. But boy, did we learn a lot with that brand, helped the family exit that business. And frankly, in great part, due to the success of the Red Bull brand in the house. Left to Coca-Cola, spent about 8 years there. Towards the end of that career was in a, you know, general manager, division president type role. Then went over to Coors, Miller Coors, did a very similar thing there, ran their national accounts, and then jumped into the entrepreneurial water originally with a tequila product. So, Jen, I really have had the opportunity to work in consumer packaged goods, namely beverage, literally from loading trucks in the warehouse to running businesses for some of the biggest players in the industry, and had a chance to gather some pretty good insights during that period of time.
What was your entry into cannabis? Because I feel what we see in this space is, of course, folks come from a lot of different industries. If you're coming from CPG, I feel like you've got the right framework to, at the end of the day, build a well-known brand, a successful brand. Tell me more.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, my family in Denver, I'll call it Denver, New Mexico, parts of Texas and Arizona, had been in the cannabis industry for a very long time, and we'll leave it at that. And they were one of the first entrants into, now this not necessarily family that I worked with or was involved with, but you know, it wasn't something that was foreign to us. It was a medicine that, you know, from generations of people in this region, we were well aware of. My dear uncle, who's since passed, was one of the first licensed operators with a grow and a dispensary in Denver. And actually, they were the catalyst for why our company started to use the Vessel technology for cannabis. My cousin, his son, was just really inspired by, you know, our technology and the capabilities it brings to preserve ingredients and mix it at the point of use and really had a vision that, you know, we should do something with cannabis. And you know, this is the very early days. There were no drinks. I think maybe Dixie Elixir soon followed with something. And we just started playing around with it in the lab, frankly. And we were sharing it with friends and family and, you know, folks in the business. And there was a real, real, real appreciation for what we had formulated and developed.
Yeah. Well, the technology itself is wild. It's patented, first off. So there's, you really don't see anything like it. For, I'll talk a little bit about pot shot. We're talking about 100 milligram shot where all of the plant-based medicine is in the cap of the bottle. And you can explain this much better than me, but when
go ahead. No, I mean, I can show, I have one here just in case we want it. It's hard to, I've told people before, this is like, it's trying to explain what chocolate tastes like if you've never had it before. It's just, it's easier to see or in, you know, the case of chocolate taste, but this is a nitrogen pressurized, oxygen depleted and UV protected delivery chamber in the closure. You'll notice when we open it, it's mixed. That liquid went from clear to, in this case, green. This is potshot lunar lime. But what we've done is we've stored the active ingredient, the plant-based material, in the closure. And what the closure does, without getting super hyper technical, is it protects it against the enemies of organic materials. So what destroys organic materials? UV, sun exposure, oxidation, heat, humidity. And so it's a really unique, inert environment that allows us to preserve content. And so during that early development process, we had, you know, we were in the early days of sonic emulsification and getting, you know, the active ingredient down into nanoparticles so that it performed better in the body. And a lot of people do that. I won't claim that we're, you know, the first to do it. But we do have a proprietary surfactant that we use in the process that we think just performs very well in the body. And that was the catalyst for it was, boy, if we could apply that technology to cannabis, how great would it be to really have a very disruptive product in that space?
Sure. Well, and it's a, you know, and of course it's a podcast and we can kind of share some of the, when we post, we'll share a little bit more too, so people can get a visual.
Yeah.
It's a pressurized cap / closure. Again, like I said, when you crack it, it automatically propels and powerfully mixes the content into the bottle. So like I said, we haven't seen much like it, but there's been other use cases. I know that you're not just in the, beverage space as well. Where else are you guys using the technology?
Yeah, so actually Vessel, the company that that I lead, holds the worldwide exclusive rights to the technology, and we're using that in certain cosmetic applications, household cleaning and disinfectant, traditional beverages. Last year or the year before, launched a product with Pernod Ricard on their Glenlivet brand, where we're introducing cocktail flavors into a bottle. We got some really exciting projects we're working on in the moment in wine preservation and wine aeration. So, and I can show some things here in a bit, but the bottom line is it really does run a pretty broad spectrum of applications outside of cannabis. So we started a separate company, which at the moment I'm CEO of, but we're looking for somebody to fill that space now. Which owns the Potshot and Calvara brands you spoke about earlier. And that's a separate operating entity that has the rights to the technology globally in the cannabis space.
Got it. So tell me more about, I know that how you came to be, where you guys are going. We've kind of hinted on it a little bit. Give me the scope of where you guys are right now, as far as there's some states under your belt. I know you'll be entering. Yeah. States on the regulated side. Tell me more on that.
I mean, we're really excited. So we started with the technology's use, and I failed to mention that when we're filling that you talked about the pressure, we're filling the concentrate into the closure, purging the oxygen from the closure and pressurizing it with an inert gas like nitrogen. And that's really the reason that we're able to deliver a couple of important things, and it plays a significant role in our distribution and the build out of that model, how we distribute and how we retail. So because of the things I just mentioned, we don't need refrigeration and we don't require chemical preservatives. So you end up with the all natural product with a really, you know, impressive indication delivery. So extremely short onset, pretty decent offset. So, and you're metabolizing that in the upper GI really before it ever gets to your liver. So it's a very pleasant performance for the human body. People love it. So we said, we've got this unique technology that's very small format, and we'd like to, you know, get it into a couple of key markets. But there's quite an expense to building out the infrastructure to fill closures, fill bottles, label bottles, and basically build a mini manufacturing and bottling facility. So right out the gate, we opted to build mobile manufacturing units and open multiple states at the same time, just three or four states early on. And we manufacture with this mobile units, whereby we roll the manufacturing environment into a licensed producer. So we only do exclusive agreements on a state-by-state basis with licensed producers who either have a full wholesale distribution business or retail plus wholesale. And we had some modest success. We had Calvara in Nevada, New Mexico, for a short period of time in Colorado. And it was performing well. Consumers liked it, but we were, you know, we're doing a 10 milligram offering and really found that consumers were looking for something more in their purchase. And that's how Potshot came about. But that was early on. Last year, our director of marketing had a thought on a brand that would be a little more legacy driven, a little more of a tip of hat, the hat to the, you know, to the real cannabis user, the enthusiast.
Yeah.
And she put together a brand with some support called Potshot, which I showed a moment ago. And we tested it in just a couple of retailers in one of our markets. And not only could we not keep the product in stock, but we couldn't keep the apparel, the t-shirts, the hats, everything about the brand people loved. So we prioritized that. We started working it into a few other markets. And to answer your question, Jen, we are, you know, we picked up Arizona with Trulieve with multiple other markets on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Trulieve also wholesales our brand in Arizona. So, I mean, as of this month, we are in basically every MSO in the state. The brand performs very well. We've been really conscious not to go deep in price. You know, we think that there's a consumer value associated with the brand, and we want to make sure that we maintain that. I wouldn't necessarily say that we're sort of, you know, really high premium priced, but we're certainly priced above most of the 100 milligram market. And by the end of this year, we'll be in, you know, 12, if not 13 of the regulated states. We're launching three of them as we speak. Probably the top performing market at the moment right now, though, is Michigan. It just really surprised us. And this summer has been incredible.
Yeah, that market has been one to watch for a while. And it's so interesting because they're so deeply impacted by price compression. Michigan, of course, has one of the highest, if not the highest, consumption rates in the U.S. What's really interesting about that market as well is it's an even split between consumers. It's not a male dominated consumer base when we talk about who's purchasing, who's consuming. So we, you know, as an agency, we always keep our eyes on Michigan. There's some large players in there that are just really doing some cool stuff. So it's not surprising to me that Michigan is crushing right now for you guys.
Yeah, and I mean, and to be frank, it's difficult to manage through all of that. I mean, there's areas of the state that are very much driven by, they're transient and they're very seasonal in terms of folks that are visiting lakes during the summer. And you know, our dispensaries will tell us that they don't see the same people every week. It's people who are, you know, renting Airbnbs a week at a time, and they're packed, but they don't know the people and they may not see them again until next year. And then you've got a very loyal consumer base in other parts of the state. You're right. There has been some price compression. Hasn't affected us yet. So first of all, I'd say this, you know, being in the cannabis business for a while, you've probably heard this. I mean, everybody you meet is the biggest, the best, and the first at everything. In fact, I don't know if I've met number two yet. We're really working hard to be disciplined about, you know, getting the consumer what they want and constantly refining it to make sure it does, you know, adding flavors, adding, Variants of the product. You know, we'll go from 4 SKUs to 8 SKUs this year on Potshot alone. We're also introducing Calvara Socials, which are mocktails in Arizona. But it's really about building what the consumer wants and then offering things to both the bud tender and the consumer that really fit their lifestyle, which is a big part of why Miguel's a part of our business. And without getting in all the details, but it's about giving people an opportunity to really enjoy the cannabis lifestyle or, you know, elements of the lifestyle that bud tenders and consumers really love. And if we can do that, then we think we can avoid going down the price tube. And as a result, you know, Jen, it's worked. I mean, knock on wood, we're 40% at retail above the market in a couple of our key markets. And we've grown to the number one brand in those markets, at least in the large number of retailers we're in. We trade off, you know, we're not always number one, but we're always hovering around number one, two, or three, and at a price premium. And that, you know, that makes us feel really good. Not that we want to overcharge consumers, but that consumers are getting the value that they paid for, and they really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many flavors to why you're, and I'll brag on you. I know you don't want to brag on yourself. I'll brag on you though. We're huge fans and partners of yours. But there's more to your organization than the technology, the innovation. I was fortunate enough to join you all on a dispensary tour with Miguel in Arizona and able to observe how you all are received and how you kind of bring folks into your fold. I mean, I feel like we had like a mini caravan going from dispensary to dispensary. I shared a vehicle with family members, got to meet your brother and of course your daughter. And it's such the way that we rolled into each of the operations with humility, you know, from your side, from your team. And here comes, you know, Miguel is a significant celebrity, and to see his humility, I feel like is also part of who you guys are as well, and it's apparent in this conversation. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'll brag on you all day long. You guys are doing
well. You know, look, if I can brag a little bit on that particular point, we made a really conscious decision early on, you know, recognizing Miguel's celebrity status, and I think that's only going to grow this year with new music and tour. But he, you know, he fell in love with this because of the technology behind it. In particular, he just loved that we were emulsifying the cannabis distillate with sound. And sound is really important to him. And he wanted to know the frequencies and wanted to see and understand how it worked and how that impacted the body. He really, really, really is a true, just dyed-in-the-wool advocate for cannabis, both for recreational and medical use. He thinks both are very important. So anyway, with that said, you know, when we made the decision to partner with one another doing this, it was, you know, we will not be, and he will not be, sort of the fanboy approach to celebrity involvement in a brand. We've seen that, right? We've also seen that it doesn't necessarily work. In fact, most of the time it fails. This was about him being an owner and engaging, you know, our most important constituents, which are, frankly, it's the bud tenders. It's the retailers, it's our distributors. And then, you know, at the end of all that is serving a consumer. It was about how do we and how does he interact with them? And what you saw that day on that tour, there was a lot of thought behind it. Number one, we didn't promote it. There was no public promotion whatsoever. The idea was that he would go visit these dispensaries with us and we would meet with bud tenders. And if you remember that day, you know, on every dispensary trip, they sort of stopped what they were doing. We got together with the bud tenders. They, you know, were able to talk to him about the product. They had sampled it previously. And the idea was to have conversations with folks. Mm-hmm. And it worked. I mean, not only did we see a really nice sales lift during that period, but that's, you know, the state director at the end of that tour came to us and said, I'd really like to bring in your Calvara Socials.
Nice.
And so without asking for it, I think that involvement from Miguel, that passion about what we do, because he was just bragging on Calvara Socials. And then we had a dinner later that evening where we had some of the buyers in attendance. And, you know, there's probably 30 people at this dinner. You were there. five or six, four maybe different tables. And I don't think I saw Miguel eat. He spent his time working and talking with the folks that we do business with. And I'm just proud of what he does and excited that he's on the team. And what you saw, the family atmosphere, really is just, it's the culture of the organization. It's what we want to be.
Well, even those who are not related to you, I feel like even your team, as we stepped into those dispensaries, I saw Aaron, I saw Tatiana engaging with the bud tenders and asking, like, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? And to have I feel like they also felt very loved, and we often don't see that in the space. What we often see is there's two groups of folks who are ignored in this industry. It's the consumer and it's the bud tenders. So to see how you all interacted, asked questions, we brought those notes back and thought, okay, how do we, those opinions are valuable, and they really are
Not just
your front line.
sniff bud tenders and expect to win. These are the sommeliers of weed. They love what they do. They're passionate about it. They have a tremendous amount of knowledge that they've acquired over a long period of time. You can see it in what they wear. They're proud of what they do. They're generally, they've got a bunch of buttons or pins or t-shirts or things. They're wearing the things that are important to them on them, maybe even tattooed. And if you don't give them what they deserve, which is a personal relationship with the brand, then you're setting yourself up to fail. And I get it. This industry is tough. You mentioned it earlier. People talk about the perils and challenges of cannabis. Never mind that most people can't pay their bills. It's a very competitive market. Everybody's trying to win the same thing. It's, very saturated, and some of that's beginning to shake out. But I think what we're trying to do here, and so far it's so good. Let's hope it continues to work, is we're trying to take our time. So a good example of that, Jen, would be we just recently went into California, right? And we've been petrified to go into California. It's a tough market. I've ran brands in California outside of cannabis before, and Los Angeles, Southern California in particular, it's probably one of the most difficult markets in the world. And if there's a second to that, it's the Bay Area. It's just a really tough market to make a brand work. It's an industry that's been around for a while. The people who work in it are very knowledgeable. They can spot fakers from a mile away. And we didn't want to go into that until we're really ready to approach it right. And so the example I was going to give you is we started with HCS, and we said, look, let's just go get 15 accounts to start with. And they're used to somebody going in and saying, we want 200 accounts by this date. And but the reality is, can they execute the point of sale? Can they really interface with the bud tenders? Can they put incentives together for them that matter? And I don't mean just cash incentives, but like surveying them and finding out, as we did here in Arizona, they love music. A lot of them are musicians. They want things that have to do with personal encounters with music. So we did that. So the point I'm getting to really here is, we won't be to 100 accounts in California until the end of this year. And I might be criticized for that later, but I want to know that we have 100 accounts that we can execute in, that we can provide the level of service to the bud tender and to the consumer that make the brand a meaningful brand. And that's a lot of hard work, and it costs money. So I think we're going to stick to that for a while.
Well, we've seen particularly on the beverage side, when folks go in, and I'll say that more so on the hemp beverage side, just because we can kind of see as that relates, I think sometimes closest to the CPG when we're talking about beverage, like in big box liquor stores and things like that. And what we've seen on the beverage space is there must be not only in-person interaction, demos, promos, whatever that looks like, but there's an educational piece as well in the regulated market. I'll kind of pivot back over. It's like the assumption when folks go into a dispensary is that they are likely a cannabis consumer and maybe a can of curious, but really when we're talking about like a high THC beverage, we're really talking about, folks kind of know what they're stepping into. This is a long way to a smaller question. I'm curious to know, not only on Kalvara, but entering into the hemp space, what does low dose look like for you guys going forward?
So, that's an interesting one. We've we're tiptoeing around the hemp-derived space, and I think for good reason. We've seen a couple of markets recently where, you know, the rug was pulled out from underneath their feet, and it's hard to build a business when you just have no idea, you know, how stable it might be. So I'll use another example. Where we're focused is the alternative to alcohol for a social occasion, for a I don't know if it's necessarily a new entrant. It's really more that you don't want to get all of your THC in a single dose, right? You want to be able to stack or layer it. And that was really driven by Miguel and his conversations with the bud tenders sort of everywhere we went. We had an event in Nevada where he wanted to talk about it. We had an event in California recently, in LA, where he wanted to talk to the bud tenders about it. And then, of course, when we were in Arizona. And what drove it is, you know, we're watching this hemp-derived growth of sort of the traditional beverages that you talked about in traditional retailers, and sort of thinking about, you know, what is driving that? Is it regulation? Is it the retailer wanting to have some responsibility to the number of milligrams that are in it? Or is it what he, at least what he supposed, he likes the idea of being able to have it in a beverage form. And his reason for that, he's a singer. He doesn't like to smoke, right? It affects his voice. And he likes to have, you know, in 5 or 10 milligram increments throughout the night. And that's really what was the catalyst for Calvara Socials. And when we presented that, by the way, we're taking it into one market. We have high hopes for it. It won't happen until fall. So I'm not the expert on this by any stretch of the imagination. But these are drinks that are really, really developed along delivering a great, you know, inebriating effect, but having really incomparable flavor attributes on a lower milligram dose, and then be priced competitively, not just with other cannabis offerings, but with comparable offerings in the alcohol space. And that's really where we'll be focused. And we'll be focused on that consumer and that occasion. This is something that you can pour over ice or mix as a cocktail. It's really intended to be a replacement for the user that's not consuming alcohol, which coming out of the alcohol industry and staying close to it, there's a lot of people leaving it. It's a challenge for them.
Sure. Sure. Well, we see on the, so our sister company 4B is works more so on the wine and spirit side of the world, non-canna, of course. And what we see messaging over there, especially in the alcohol side, is how are we going to make people drink more? They're drinking less. And it's this kind of, you know, a fearful conversation, because what we're noticing in wine and spirits, and again, is if you're not pivoting to replace or include more in your portfolio to meet the consumer where they are in their consumption habits, what does that look like for your business? I think that, you know, that fear mongering is.
We have the same fear, same concern here.
Yeah.
I think one of the key differences might be, you know, the move away from alcohol is probably, you know, you can read lots on it, right? But there's a few things that are impacting it. One is, you know, a younger consumer who doesn't socialize in group settings as much as previous generations did. And consuming alcohol tends to be kind of a group activity, right? So folks that are their friend groups and their friend occasions happen online. It's just a little bit different of an occasion than it would be to hanging out, you know, at a house party, for example, right? Which is going to have alcohol at it. So that's one. It's healthy living, healthy lifestyle. But there's another component to it, and it's just the number of adults that are on Ozempic. And the reality is that industry has a tough headwind overcoming that, because it just basically stops the craving for alcohol. So I don't know that I necessarily have an answer to that. And I don't know that we're trying to necessarily, you know, go exploit those weak spots. What we're really trying to do is, again, if you build a consumer brand that touches that consumer emotionally and satisfies an occasion, and you've convinced a bud tender that they should be sharing that with consumers that are looking to fill that gap, then you've got a sales proposition, and that's really where we're focused.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, we, you know, it's an interesting point when we're talking about the rug kind of being ripped out from underneath you on the hemp side, as we tend to watch the conversation shifting, even within the state of Texas, from absolutely not to veto, you know, which the original, I think Senate Bill 3 felt like, wow, it's kind of un-Texas of Texas to do that. And so then the second side of that was the veto that came through, with Abbott. And so you're right. Like, well, you know, I think there's a lot of, I think there's a lot to gain when there's high risk in an organization, but it's interesting talking to folks who operate predominantly in the regulated side to say, I'm not really sure I'm willing to kind of risk the bread and butter that's driving our success to then dip into.
No, there's a part of it also that is, you know, we want to be loyal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the folks that brought us to the dance are those that are running this regulated business with all of its, you know, ups and downs and the perils that come with it. And to run away from them, to go grab cash somewhere that may not be there tomorrow, you know, you'd have to, if you were going to do it, you'd have to do it very carefully. Our distributors get exclusivity to our brands and their markets, so they also have to be able to distribute into those outlets. So it's not a decision that we've said no to. It's not the one that we're ignoring. It's one that we're just being careful with as we go. And sure. There are markets like, you know, in the Midwest, there's markets where really that hemp drive space is it's what cannabis is in that market, right? And the regulated space is pales in comparison to it, right? At least from a beverage perspective, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
I would say is this though, and you probably know the numbers better than I do. I looked at them a month or so ago, but I'd say even since then, beverage, we all talked about, you know, think about 5-10 years ago, right? When everyone talked about how big beverage was going to be. And we were obviously one of those folks, right? And it just never really materialized. A couple of brands did it really, really well. But as a category, it's just always been really small. Mm-hmm. This summer, we're hearing the opposite. We're seeing new brands come in. We're seeing our distributors pick up new brands. We're hearing comments of, you know, like that beverage is on fire. Beverage is an important segment. You have to have beverages to satisfy the consumer. I'm interested to dive into the numbers, you know, here most recently, but certainly there's a feeling that there's some real energy behind it right now, and we're excited to be in it.
Absolutely. Well, I'll say just even over the last few years, we've got dispensary clients throughout the U.S. I'll say, let's start with Colorado, that conversation. And we've talked to a lot of our clients on what's your gut feel on beverage. And originally these conversations were absolutely not. We don't have the shelf space. They're expensive. You know, Keef is the brand that sells well here in Colorado. Those are the OGs in this market, and there's really not a lot of competition. And we're I'll say that they said we're unwilling to expand and offer that. It takes up a ton, like I said, takes up a ton of shelf space.
Yeah, no, we actually have a solution for that. First of all, to the folks over at Keef, I mean, all the credit in the world. They run a great business. I can't say anything bad about them. we share a retail space with them. And I mean, obviously there's a competitive element to what we do, but great job. Keep doing what you're doing. I think where we've had the opportunity to, you know, sort of separate ourselves in some markets, at least, and at the risk of, you know, I just don't want to disclose anything that might be confidential, but one of our key distributors, during the conversation we were having to have them pick us up for the state, they said, we don't do beverage at all, because we don't have ways to handle pallets and refrigeration, and we have really small delivery vehicles, and it just doesn't work in our space, in our environment. And the only reason we're considering you, because as you know, it's a really small format product, and that makes sense to them. And it even becomes a smaller format product when we sell, which is coming, where we sell this, which has all the active ingredients separately, and the consumer just can use a refillable bottle at home. Now we're talking, this is their full 100 milligram dose. I do think that, you know, beverage will still have its challenges in a dispensary environment where we all know how limited and how valuable, not just the retail space, right, the displayable space is, but you got to put this stuff somewhere. And there's right. just, this isn't, these aren't Walmarts. I mean, they're very small environments, and they've taken a lot of care to merchandise themselves appropriately. And so I do think we do have one really nice differentiating factor, and that's the form factor of the product itself. And we're going to exploit that for sure.
Great. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's almost what I imagine is folks who are new to it might consider it an add-on. So we know that the retail operators are trying across the board trying to increase basket size. That's
I'm
not
so glad you mentioned that. And I know you know this because you work with Tatiana on it. But if there were a second element to our, you know, retail strategy, the first being, you know, have a relationship with the bud tender, right? But the next is we want to build baskets. We want to drive traffic to retailers. We don't want to just offer the lowest, you know, acquisition price. We'll be competitive there where we need to. But this about it for us is, I'll give you a really good example. We've done doorbusters or bundles where we're giving away potshot rolling papers, which you might think makes no sense. Why in the world would you give rolling papers away when you sell a beverage? Because we know that beverage or a shot is oftentimes, it's an add-on purchase. Mm-hmm. We bundle with Trulieve's house gummy brand all the time. And for us, it's about if we can do things that introduce consumers to our brand, mm-hmm. And if we can to become an add-on, as you just described, to somebody who's in there to buy flour, then we've just won. You know, we just won an opportunity to introduce a consumer to our new brand. And what's really cool about it, Jen, I'll brag a little bit. Recently, it's turned from retailers actually wanting to bundle with our brand because people are coming in and asking for our brand, and it's helping to build the brand that's bundled with it. And yeah. So we're going to keep bundling. I mean, we're going to keep doing things. The craziest one most recently, and I certainly won't disclose who it is, but I was with a distributor in a new state, and we've agreed to move forward. So it's coming soon, and you'll know who it is. He said, look, Walter, I'm talking to another beverage brand right now from a big player, and I don't know that I want to do two. Because I really like what you have. Mm-hmm. I said, why wouldn't you do both? And we had a long conversation about it. But by the end of the conversation, I convinced him to take both, including our competitor. We're going to compete with that brand anyway, with another distributor. If it makes him stronger and it makes him a better distributor, then you know what? We'll compete with our brand toe-to-toe at retail like we do with anybody else. But why should I hamstring or, you know, prohibit him and his business decision from making the decision that's best for his business? It's not either or. Take both. Be a competitive, strong distributor with capital to support our efforts. And if they're that, then we win. So I think we're trying to take a different approach to it. We'll see how long it lasts. I'm hopeful that it'll be, you know, a long, successful part of how we do business.
Well, and to be honest, when you look at doing business as a business partner of those who you're working with, and so when you're growing their bottom line, your bottom line is growing. It's an essential piece of the business maturity that's sometimes lacking in this space. I think we're getting there, but what we see often, and again, we work with folks on the B2B side, the B2C side, kind of the full supply chain. And businesses, for the most part right now, noses are down, heads are down as they're focusing on their own businesses to help them break even, survive. Like, they don't know if they'll be here in the next 6 months. Your narrative around supporting business of those who you're partnering with, we find that to be the perfect recipe for longevity and for success. That's how we build our business as
well.
I'll
give you another example. We did billboards in Michigan, and we said, look, let's not just do our billboard. Let's actually do the retail billboard mm-hmm. with this potshot feature, and then let's co-brand it with another. Why would we do that? We want to drive traffic to the retailer first because that's where they got to buy the product. We want to split the cost of the billboard in three, right, so that everybody can benefit from it. And I think that there's a way to do some of this. I mean, certainly you can take the approach of we're going to dominate a market, and we've seen brands do that very successfully. But I think retailers at this point, dispensaries, have seen enough examples of brands who went out and fought really aggressively down the price chain only do that to their detriment, not have enough money to really market the brand, then eventually disappear because they can't continue. The business model doesn't work. So recently, at least, we've had a lot of good conversations where I would rather than reduce my wholesale price by a dollar, commit that dollar to marketing on every unit sold for a period of time that drives traffic for the retailer, for the dispensary. And we don't win every one of those arguments, but a lot of times we do. And what it, I think the retailers who are deciding that that makes sense for them are saying, look, here's a brand who's investing in marketing and not just price. And the ones that I've invested only on price before, it wasn't a really sustainable model. So what I really have, what I'd rather have, that investment in marketing that benefits my dispensary and a brand that's sustainable and has a life ahead of it. And so far, so good. We're going to keep pursuing that path.
Great. Love it. Love it. You and I have talked about the power of execution as part of your business model as well. Not only being able to come to the table with an innovative product, business maturity to know how to partner with folks, but you've said it before that it's that the, I wouldn't say the secret sauce, but execution is something you guys do rather well. Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, it's discipline and execution. And I'll also admit that we're not 100% there yet.
Sure.
We're very aspirational about it. But to get specific about it, you know, our director of marketing, Tatiana, put together a playbook that includes all of the elements of a successful, from pre-launch to launch to post-launch to daily execution. The scorecard that measures it, the elements that need to be in it to be executed, the managerial plan to support it, whether it's weekly calls with our distributors and what they're required to do coming out of it. But it really is, it's a really well-crafted and planned approach. And frankly, it makes life easier for everybody. So when you sit down with a distributor, you know, in advance of your launch, and you plan what you're going to do for the next month, you know, or next quarter in monthly increments, and then you hold yourself accountable to it and you execute it at retail the way you said you were going to execute it, it just leaves, you know, one, there's not as much margin for error, but most importantly, you're really clear with those that you're expecting to help you get things done on what role they play in it. And we don't just do it with the distributor. As you know, we have a kickoff with the bud tenders. You know, not every single dispensary. Some we educate one-on-one because they're, you know, maybe one store operation. But on all of the larger dispensary groups, we send the space capsule, what we call it, or Tatiana calls it, out to them in advance of the meeting. It comes with samples and a T-shirt and a nice signed card from Miguel and a bunch of other stuff. And then we host a meeting, you know, either in person or on Zoom. Miguel joins us in that meeting. We introduce ourselves. We educate them a bit about the brand. We communicate the incentives. We communicate what we intend to have executed. And when we're doing that with all, you know, tiers of the operation, so us internally, the distributor, the retailer, and then all of it is pointed towards offering consumers valuable, you know, purchase opportunities, then you've got a shot at success, right? It's not a guarantee, but you know, it's about being disciplined in execution. And frankly, Jim, we're just gonna get better at it. We've got some stuff coming that we're really incredibly excited about, and you'll see it executed, you know, relentlessly in every location we're in.
Sure. Well, we know on the business side that when you have the goals set and you're looking at business objectives and kind of aligning the plan back to those, that it creates guardrails for your business so that you're not so attracted by the shiny things that we know happen in this space.
Yeah, we do one thing to be careful that we don't paint ourselves in, though, because you also need to leave room for, you know, creative thoughts and challenges, right? So in the organization, we have what's called the obligation of dissent, which means you're not just given permission to disagree with me or boss, whoever that might be. You're required to. In fact, if you're not debating and challenging things as they are, you know, when the performance review comes around, it's going to be a mark against you because we're looking for folks to challenge us. And let's face it, you know, my younger employees who are living the current cannabis lifestyle, they know more about the industry than I'll ever, you know, pretend to know. They're in it. They live it. Their friends are in it. You know, this is the generation that matters. It's the consumer that's buying from us. So I think it's, Jen, it's what you described about being disciplined, but it's also about being willing to move in new directions if someone's got justifiable cause to do so.
Yeah. Well, speaking of new directions, what's coming up next as far as international markets or even new markets to the table? I know you guys are entering Colorado here soon.
Going into Colorado soon. We're talking Ohio, Florida, New Jersey, and I feel like I'm forgetting one. New Mexico. We're going in with Potshot. We'd previously been in New Mexico, but we're going in with Potshot. You know, California alone is like getting 10 new markets, right? It's a country. And it feels like international business. And I know a lot of people just don't really respect that. The brands that have been, and the big brands that have been successful in California, we know who they are, right? They are the pros. And so when you go into California, get ready to play, you know, in the NBA. You're playing against the best of the best of the best of the best. And so I'd say the biggest markets for us would be, one, executing California at the right pace successfully, the markets I just described, but we're also doing some really cool stuff in Canada. And then as a result of Canada, exports to other parts of Europe. So I'm probably not at liberty to discuss all of it now. And some of it's not Potshot related. It's a lot more related to the technology and the benefits that it brings in the regulated medical market. And there's some really important opportunities there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're stoked on you guys. Absolutely. It's been such a treat getting to know you all, watch your business thrive, and most importantly, see where you're going next. So I know you're a busy man. I so appreciate your time to sit down and chat with me. Thanks so much, Walter.
We're excited. And Jen, we're incredibly excited to be working with you all. The insights, your hands-on approach to what we do, it's hard to even put into words the impact that has on the business. We're a small team. We're probably going to try to keep it somewhat small so that we can be nimble. So having agency support that helps to round that out is really important.
I love it. Well, again, thanks so much. Your success is completely an inspiration in this space, particularly in the beverage space. You guys are building the recipe for success that we know you're going to be here in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So
you've been listening to Cannabis Business Confidential by Hybrid Marketing Co. Tune in next time for more expert insights into the evolving cannabis industry.